your lordship.
Ekaha.
One.
Adyaha.
The original. Purushaha. Person. Supta. Dormant. Shaktiki.
Energy.
Taya.
By which.
Rajaha. The passion energy.
Sattva.
Goodness.
Tamaha.
Ignorance. Vibhidyate.
Is diversified.
Mahan.
The total material energy.
Aham.
Egotism.
Kum.
The sky.
Marut.
The air.
Agni.
Fire.
Vaha.
Water.
Dadaha.
Earth.
Surarishyaha.
The demigods and the great sages.
Abhutaganaha.
The living entities.
Idam.
All this.
Yataha.
From whom?
Translation.
My dear Lord, you are the only supreme person, the cause of all causes. Before the creation of this material world, your material energy remains in a dormant condition. When your material energy is agitated, the three qualities, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, act. And as a result, the total material energy, egotism, ether, air, fire, water, earth, and all the various demigods and saintly persons becomes manifest. Thus the material world is created. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. If the whole creation is one, that is, nothing but the Supreme Lord or Vishnu, then why do the expert transcendentalists make such categories as are found in the above verse? Why do learned and expert scholars distinguish between matter and spirit? In answer to these questions, Lord Shiva says that spirit and matter are not creations of various philosophers, but are manifested by Lord Vishnu as described in this verse. Tvam Eka Adya Purushaha. Spiritual and material categories are made possible by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But actually, there are no such distinctions for the living entities who are eternally engaged in the service of the Lord. There is only a material world for those who want to imitate the Lord and become enjoyers. Indeed, the material world is nothing but forgetfulness of the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of everything. The distinction between matter and spirit is created by the sleeping energy of the Lord. When the Lord wants to give some facility to those living entities who want to imitate the Lord in His enjoyment, it is only for them that this material world is created by the dormant energy of the Lord. For instance, sometimes children want to imitate their mother and cook in the kitchen. And at such a time, the mother supplies them with some toys so that the children can imitate her cooking. Similarly, when some of the living entities want to imitate the activities of the Lord, this material cosmic manifestation is created for them by the Lord. The material creation is therefore caused by the Lord through His material energy. It is by the glance of the Lord that the material energy is activated. At that time, the three material qualities are set into motion, and the material energy is manifested first in the form of the Mahatattva, then egotism, then ether, then air, fire, water, and earth. After the creation, the living entities are impregnated in the cosmic manifestation, and they emerge as Lord Brahma and the seven great rishis, then as different demigods. From the demigods come human beings, animals, trees, birds, beasts, and everything else. The original cause, however, is the supreme personality of Godhead, as verified herein. Tvameka dhya purusha. This is also confirmed in Brahma Sanghita, 5th chapter, text 1. Ishvara parama krishna. Sachidananda vigraha. Anadiradhir govinda sarva karana karanam. Those who are covered by the material energy cannot understand that the origin of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. This is summarized in the Vedanta aphorism, Janmadyasya Yataha. That's from the Vedanta Sutra 1.1.2. Krishna also confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, text 8. Aham sarvasya parvavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva vajanti mam buddha bhava samanvataha. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. When Krishna says that he is the origin of everything, aham sarvasya prabhava, he means that he is even the source of Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the Purusha avatars, the material manifestation, and all the living entities within the material world. Actually, the world prabhava, creation, only refers to this material world, for since the spiritual world is eternally existing, there is no question of creation. In the Chatushloki of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord says, Aham evasam evagre. I was existing in the beginning before the creation. That's from the Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, 9th chapter, text 33. In the Vedas, it is also said, Eko Narayana Asit. Before the creation, there was only Narayana. This is also confirmed by Shankaracharya. Narayana Paro Vyaktat. Narayana is transcendental to the creation. Gita Bhasha. Since all the activities in Narayana are spiritual, when Narayana said, let there be creation, that creation was all spiritual. The material only exists for those who have forgotten that Narayana is the original cause. Important verse, purport. So, Tvameka dhya purusha supta shakti staya rajasattva tamo vidvidyate mahannaham kam arudagni vadaraha surarshiho bhutagana hitam yataha. So, Om Gana Tivananda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, first I'm going to describe non-Krishna conscious philosophies using the words Parinama and Vivarta. So, Parinama means transformation, and Vivarta means illusion. Okay. So there's several different types of non-Krishna conscious philosophies that are, actually you would say they're Vedic, they're one of the six philosophies taught in the Vedic tradition. And one is called, it's a type of Parinamavad. Parinamavad means transformation. Many impersonalists, they say that the Lord becomes transformed into the material energy, or he transforms himself. He becomes transformed. And of course, we know that is not true because the Isha Upanishad teaches us, Om Purnamadam, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and even though so many perfect and complete emanations come from him, he remains perfect and complete. So he doesn't become transformed by emanating something. Just like ourselves, if we create something or if we buy something, then we lose some of our own, let's say, money or potency or something like that. Whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he just glances at the material energy as being described here. Saikshita is the word. And basically, he's still lying down on the Ananta Shesh with Lakshmi asleep. Doesn't have to wake up for the whole thing. How many of us can create something or do something practical while we're asleep? Not possible. So he just glances, and that glance, of course, we mentioned this yesterday, actually, is known as Shambhu, who is Lord Shiva, of course. And that glance, known as Lord Shiva, consorts with the regulative matrix, which is actually Durga, and all the living entities are implanted within the material creation. That is because during the time of the dissolution, all the living entities are within the body of the Mahavishnu in a dormant state. Like when the Mahavishnu breathes out, first of all, the pradhan, the unmanifested stage of material nature. Material nature continues to exist, but it's just not manifested. Sometimes the example I use in this regard is like if someone has some clay. When I was young, we would play with clay. I think most children play with clay, right? We had this thing called silly putty and whatever it is. Came in like a little egg shape. And it was just like a blob. But when a conscious living entity, which was me, I guess I was semi-conscious when I was a kid. Not fully conscious. I mean, not even fully conscious now, but to speak of then. So when the living entity plays with the clay, he gives it some shape. I made little men out of it. Of course, with the silly putty, I was able to take imprints from my comic books and stretch them. So anyway, it had some meaning at that point. But before that, it was just like a lump. So the material energy is something like that. The Lord just glanced at it. He's not transformed. He's not diminished in any way. But there is a Vaishnava Parinam Vad, which means the material energy becomes transformed. The Lord has multifarious energies, and his energies, specifically the material energy, becomes transformed. As the Bhagavad Gita says, what? Bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. Again and again, it is manifest and then unmanifest. So there's a transformation there, but only of matter. Just like our bodies are transformed. I mean, just like every time I come back here to Sweden, I see changing bodies. What I mean? People look different. Either when they're young, like Mathura there, he looks better. And when you're... Sorry about that. I hope I'm not insulting anyone. And so when you get older, you look worse. Anyway. Of course, Prabhupada also said that that's a different body, too. But it's just like the... Prabhupada gave the example, which is really interesting. He said it's like the frames in a movie. Because in the old days, they used to have movies, you know, like celluloid, and it had like so many frames per second. Actually, even video, it's like that too. There's so many frames a second, sometimes 30, sometimes 60, sometimes 29 point whatever. And sometimes even more than that. So these frames are presented to us so quickly that it appears to be in motion. It appears to be continuous. And of course, this is also something to do with quantum mechanics too. That, you know, they're actually discrete. Things are discrete, but they're so small, it appears to be continuous. For example, this matter appears to be continuous, but it's not continuous. It's actually mostly space. It's pixelated. Anyway, enough Maya. So Krishna transforms his energy, but Krishna is never transformed. He's always there. You know, Jopi son of Yatma, Bhutanam Isharopi son, Praktim Swamidistaya, Samavami Yatmavaya. He appears in his very same transcendental body whenever he comes down to the earth planet or stays in the spiritual world. Although, in that transcendental body, he can look a lot of different ways. He has very different avatars. He look like a half man, half lion. He could look like a tortoise. He could look like a fish. That's pretty amazing. But still, it's the same transcendental body. He doesn't become transformed, or his body. But his body is, you know, there's no duality between him and his body. Like, there's a duality with us. But his body, which is him, is never transformed. It just, he can make it appear differently according to the different situation. In fact, Prabhupada said that Krishna has incarnations or avatars in every species of life. That means, you know, 8,400,000. And actually, we can even say in species that aren't species of life, like mixed species, like Nrsimha Bhagavan. You know, he's like a mixed species, not one of the 8,400,000 species of life. Because he's not man or beast. You know, he was something that was completely unusual, different. So, anyway, this Krishna's amazing. Even though his body is not transformed, then still it's the same body, the same person. Wow. Advaita chuta nadi rananta rupam adyam parana purasham navyovanam chavadeshu durlabama durlabama atma bhaktu govinda madi purasham tamaham bhajami. It's the same person. Wow. Pretty amazing guy, isn't he? He's able to do all these things. So, anyway, so what we do, we have our Vaishnava Parinam Bhav, which means transformation of Krishna's energy, not Krishna. And then there's this other word I mentioned before, which is Vivarta. Vivarta means an illusion. So some impersonalists, they state that I am God or something, you know, we're all God, or somehow or other, God's an illusion. The problem with that is that if you were God and you were an illusion, that means illusion is God. Illusion is actually superior to God, because God, illusion put God into illusion. Of course, we do know that Krishna voluntarily puts himself under yoga maya to forget that he's God so he can enjoy with his friends. But that's a different thing. Krishna's not, he embraces illusion, he doesn't, not under the influence of illusion. Whereas we are under the influence of illusion, and certainly we're not God by any stretch of the imagination. And of course, Prabhupada stated in the late 1960s, Prabhupada stated that so many gods are coming from India. And it was like that. It was amazing. There, practically every week there was another person who was declaring himself to be God from India. And they would do some tricks, like magic tricks, impress people. You know, people are impressed, you know, when they don't understand the technology. You know, Prabhupada said mystic means misty or something like that. They don't understand the technology. Just like if you were to present modern day technology to people who were 100 years ago, they just go, wow. I mean, for example, in the South Pacific, there were these hangar sex. I'll explain what I mean. That means during World War II, the American soldiers, the British soldiers, they would land on these different islands in the South Pacific where there were natives who had never seen airplanes before, never seen anyone but, you know, their own natives, whatever. And so they would land there to establish bases to deal with the Japanese. And they would bring with them all sorts of goodies for the natives, like chocolate. The devotees eat chocolate, I don't know. But anyway, they would bring chocolate and different things, you know, American soldiers, and they thought, wow, these are gods coming from the spiritual world or something like that. So after they left, after the Americans, the British, and the Australians too, they left these islands, and the poor natives didn't have their gods anymore. Poor guys. So they made deities. Not of the soldiers, but of the airplanes. Because they thought, you know, this way they'll create a portal. You know, portal means a door.
Cargo cults.
Cargo cults, yeah, it was called cargo cults. They would create a portal for the gods to come down again. Because this is how the gods emanated. The gods emanated from airplanes. So, you know, you've got to make a portal. So, anyway, so obviously we weren't gods, or I wasn't there. Maybe I was there. But it's not that But people just didn't understand the technology of how it happened. So in the same way that you got these Mayavadis who said that the Lord is Maya, or this body is Maya, or we're God and we're in Maya, or whatever, and they do some mystical, not even mystical tricks, just some magical tricks, you know, like when we were young, we saw magicians pulling rabbits out of hairs, not hair, out of hats, you know, a rabbit is a hare. So, pulling rabbits out of hats, the one I was particularly impressed with was when the magician would pull money out of people's ears. That's the one I wanted to learn. Coming from my ethnic background, you know, that was particularly attractive to me. So, so the point is that Krishna is never in illusion. Vivarta, that's called Vivarta. Whereas we are in illusion. Of course, there's a famous book written by Jagannanda Pandit called Vivarta, Prema Vivarta, which deals with the illusion of love. You know, when one is in so much love with Krishna, and he was in love with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood of Satyabhama, that he, one is in this like bewilderment of love. And of course, that's a bhava, which we mentioned briefly yesterday. It's one of the sanchari bhavas, the 33 like symptoms of ecstatic love that are intermittent and uncontrollable. So, anyway, so those are the two types of illusions. So here we see that the lower two types of Mayavadi and personal philosophy, Vivarta and Parinam. But we also accept Vivarta, that's the living entities in illusion. And we also accept Parinam, just to review what I just said, that the material energy is transformed by the Supreme Lord's glance, of the Supreme Lord's desire, and the Supreme Lord is Aptakama, which means his desire, kama means desire, not only lust, that his desire is fulfilled just by his wanting it. He doesn't even have to do anything. Because all these energies of the Lord, you know, they're basically the three energies, material, spiritual, marginal, they're all first-class servants of Krishna. A first-class servant does whatever the master wants without being asked. That'd be pretty good. A second-class servant does what the master wants after the master asks. Third-class servant does what the master wants when the master asks, but he gets really, he's nasty about it. He says, why did Guru Maharaj ask me to do that? I'm going to do it anyway because I have to. That's third class. And 10th class doesn't even do what the master wants. So we have a lot of experience with 10th class. Anyway, and third class. So, but Krishna being Aptakama, this is described in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. That means his desires are fulfilled without his even asking anybody because of his energies. Parasha Shaktir Vividaiva Shuryate. So Babaki Ganam Balakriyacha. So he just wants it to happen, and it happens, like this creation of the material world. That's pretty nice. Therefore, he's also described in the beginning of Bhagavatam as Swarat. He's independent. He doesn't require anyone or anything else in order to be happy. Whereas we require so many things to be happy. Just to live, we require air, food, light, water, friendship, and all these other things. And we have to endeavor for these things. Just like many of you, just like Nandini here, has to work a job.
Just to maintain
her body, you know, she has. And she's quite a young lady. No, she's getting older, and she's working a job so that later on the government will be merciful to her and give her some pension. And, you know, we all have to work. I mean, I have to work my job, too. Not that I mean, I don't need it to eat, but in order to satisfy Krishna. So we all have to do something. Krishna doesn't have to do anything. Natasha Karyam Karanam Navidyate. Krishna, and in fact, Krishna in the spiritual world, Goloka Vinivashati Akilatma Bhutta, doesn't go out of Vrindavan, and he just has a good time. That's God's psychology. If anyone asks why does God do something, the ultimate answer is because he likes to. That's his psychology. You don't have to send him to a psychologist. You know, Krishna doesn't have to lay down on a couch and just say, why do you like butter? Because my mother used to feed me butter when I was young. You know, no, Krishna likes butter because he likes butter. Why does he like the cows? Because he likes the cows. And you can come up with so many philosophical explanations. Well, Krishna likes the cows because they give milk. Krishna likes the cows because they're cute. Krishna likes the cows because they moo. But it's just Krishna. Why does Krishna play a flute? I mean, why does he play the guitar? He probably does. But anyway, why is Krishna's favorite instrument the flute? Because he likes it. Why not the oboe? Why not the bassoon, you know? He could. You know, because he likes it. That's God. Everything he does is because he's having a good time. Why does he come down to save us? Prichanaya sadunam vinashaya jadushkanam. Because he likes it. He loves us. That's all. You know, very easy explanation for God. He's the supreme enjoyer. And we can enjoy when we give him enjoyment. You know, typical example, like the hand gives enjoyment to the body by feeding the mouth. It goes to the stomach. So not independently. You know, that's an example Prabhupada gave. So anyway, this is one point here. Another point I wanted to mention, which I think is really important in Prabhupada's purport, he actually describes here about the soul's original position before he came into the material world. Now, this is a point of contention amongst many people who don't accept what Prabhupada said. Even, in fact, we had to, not we, but the GBC had to write a whole book about this called Our Original Position. But Prabhupada is very explicit here. In this purport, he says, this distinction between matter and spirit is created by the sleeping energy of the Lord. When the Lord wants to give some facility to the living entities who want to imitate the Lord in his enjoyment. Now, if you're going to imitate someone, you have to be able to see what they do, isn't it? I mean, it'd be hard for me to imitate someone who I've never seen. I mean, think about it for a second. If I tell you about someone like, who you've never seen a picture of him, never heard of what he does, I want you to imitate him. How could you imitate someone who you've never seen? So it's Prabhupada says, imitate the Lord in his enjoyment. Then, and Prabhupada gives this wonderful example here, that children sometimes want to imitate their mother who cooks. And I actually saw that when I was young, that I had some friends who were girls, not girlfriends, but friends. You know, we were 5 years old, what can I say, you know, wasn't romantic. So friends who were girls, and they were given these little tin stoves by their mother. And they, inside the tin stove, there was a light bulb, not so hot, but you know, like battery-operated light, which signified the heat of the stove. And the little girls would take again, we'll talk about silly putty, because one of these little girls tried to feed it to me once. She takes some like clay, put it inside, and bake a little something, and she said, oh, my friend, would you like to eat this little cookie I just baked? Fortunately, clay that they give the children is non-toxic. Or else I wouldn't be here today.
You ate it.
I took a bite out of it, yeah. You know, at 5 years old, what do you know? You know, a cute little girl gives you a cookie, you know. What are you going to do about it? So it was obnoxious. I appreciated the devotion, though. But, so... And that's like us, you know, where Krishna says, you know, this is the example Prabhupada gives, and it's such a nice example to explain the material energy to people. That, so Krishna says, all right, you want to imitate me? You want to have your own gopis? Okay, here's a gopi for you. But you're from Mars and she's from Venus. You know, you know that whole book, Men from Mars. You know, my, like, a, oh my God, I shouldn't give a sannyas class right now. But anyway, it's like, anyway, so it's like the Palumbo story where Balaram says, my, how this carrier has changed. You know the story of Palumbasura story? That he was carrying Balaram away, and first he was a coward boy, and then, oh my God. So it's like that when you try to enjoy someone else. I mean, if you try to serve them in Christian conscience, that's wonderful. That's a perfect relationship. Whether it's man-woman relationship or friendship relationship or whatever. But as soon as we try to enjoy the matter, it's like that clay cookie that I was eating. It's just like, you can't enjoy someone or something in this world. Anyway, so this is a perfect example. Such a time, the mother supplies them with some toys so the children can imitate her cooking. Similarly, and I'll continue Prabhupada's purport, when some of the living entities want to imitate, there's the word imitate, activities of the Lord. So not only they just want to imitate the Lord's, let's say, ontological position, he's the supreme controller, he's the supreme enjoyer, you know, enjoyer proprietor, but they want to imitate the activities of the Lord. That's very specific. Activities mean you see what the Lord does. You're in knowledge. Not that you came into the material world just because you happened to pop out of the Tatashta, whatever. Anyway, I'm dealing with that argument that people have outside of ISKCON, that we just came from the Tatashta, we were born out of the Mahavishnu. We weren't born out of the Mahavishnu, we were lying dormant in the Mahavishnu. There's a difference between that. And then Prabhupada says, this material cosmic manifestation is created for them, actually by the Lord. And one time, Prabhupada actually said, you know, why? Someone asked him, why does Krishna create this material world? And Prabhupada replied, you created the material world. You know, not that you actually directly created it, but by your desire. Why does the government create a prison house? Because the prisoners are actually responsible for the criminals are responsible for the creation of the prison house. So, anyway, so this answers that eternal question which bothers devotees very often, which people from outside ISKCON use as a wedge to try to convince people to leave ISKCON. That's another point. They just like dwell on this point about where the soul came from, to convince you that you don't know and our guru knows better than your guru. You know, it's a political point. You know, sometimes when you have to criticize someone or they criticize someone, you have to do it in a subtle way so it appears like you're making a philosophical point, but actually you're just being political. Because behind every point that people make, there's always a motivation. Try to be aware of that. Anyway, all I know is that we were with Krishna. We were originally Krishna conscious living entities. Exactly what we were doing, that's another thing. But we chose to come here in the material world. Otherwise, we would say, or someone would say, that God is cruel. Because without being aware of your choice, you're being punished. You know, that's not good. I mean, sometimes parents do that. Let's say you get blamed for something you didn't do, your parents will just like punish you. No, I didn't do it. But God is omniscient. He will never punish you or make you suffer for something you didn't do. And it's not, and also another point is the punishment that Krishna is giving us is not a retributive punishment. It's restorative punishment. There's two philosophies of punishment. One is called retribution, and the other one is called restoration. Retribution means just make someone suffer because you did something bad. Like my mother used to say, you know, I'll make you make it so you don't sit for a whole week. She never caught me. Anyway, so, but that's retribution. Or like in America, for example, you have capital punishment. And if some criminal is condemned to be killed, then people will actually do something called tailgating outside of the prison. That means they people get their booze, you know, beer, and sit on the beds of trucks outside waiting for the person to be killed in the prison, and they'll just have a party. And they feel good. Ah, oh, we got even. What, revenge? Krishna is not vengeful. Right? I mean, of course, sometimes in the Bible you get that impression that God is vengeful. I mean, that's a projection of the mentality of the people. That's not actually God. Because Krishna has everything. You know, he's not jealous. But there's this thing called restorative justice. Restorative means that he does what's necessary in order to restore you to your original constitutional position, although it may take many, many lifetimes of suffering in this material world to do so. That's Krishna. Of course, someone gives the argument, well, if I don't remember what I did, why am I getting punished for something that I don't remember? You know, I did it last lifetime. Well, the point is, to get rectified, you don't have to remember what you did in terms of causing your improper consciousness. Krishna deals on the subtle level. For example, you learned a lot of stuff that you don't remember right now. How you learned? You learned how to walk, at least most of us. I don't remember how I learned to walk. And I'm sure while I was learning to walk, I fell down a hell of a lot of times, like every kid does. But I learned to walk, and I learned to talk, and I learned to sit, and I learned to behave myself. No, I haven't. So, but I learned all these things. But so this learning takes place even within this lifetime on the subtle plane. You don't have to have conscious remembrance to learn something, or to unlearn something, or to get unconditioned or reconditioned. It's not necessary, because this is the subconscious plane. And so this is what we call the subtle body, Linga Sharira. So anyway, so what Krishna does, whatever he does, is for his enjoyment, just to reiterate. And part of his enjoyment is to rectify us so we can actually enjoy with him in the spiritual realm. And as part of that, you get all this karma stuff. And it's all Krishna's compassion and mercy. So, and we came from the spiritual world, whether you like it or not. So any questions or comments? Yeah. Sasaki.
You mentioned this the problem of evil.
Yeah.
Why has God created this world where we suffer? My question would be: people sometimes ask this question or bring up this question, and they are not really thinking in philosophy. Terms.
Yeah.
They are actually quite emotional or bitter or confused, mm-hmm. and they are in emotional or in mental level somehow. How could we bring somehow nicely people to the philosophical level so that we could actually explain this? This is quite elevated, all these reasons for...
Use metaphors, analogies, stories, like that of how a parent would deal with their child. You know, not necessarily you send them to hell. Like Krishna. Like Yamaraj. Anyway, so, I mean, sometimes, like, tough love is necessary. I mean, let's say the example. One example would be the story that Prabhupada tells about the young boy who was taken care of by his aunt. And his aunt never corrected the young boy. He just allowed him to do everything. He became a murderer and did so many things like that. Finally, the young boy was condemned to death because he had killed someone. And he was asked, do you have anything, last request you'd like to make? And the young boy said, I'd like to just speak to my aunt again. And so they brought the aunt and he bit off her ear. He said, why didn't you chastise me? Why didn't you correct me? Because love means correcting. And secondly, the pain and misery we experience from this material body is because of attachment to the body. We're not really, now this is heavy, but we're not really in pain. The soul's not in pain, it's just attached. Like when you see a movie, sometimes you cry. I don't cry. But not for movies, because your attachment, or let's say, let's use another, oh my God, here we go. The simulation hypothesis, you know. You understand? We're actually in a big video game right now, whether you like it or not. And, you know, because you're attached to certain things, you experience certain feelings. I'll give you a practical example myself in virtual reality. Okay, not now, this body. But once upon a time, I was with Jaipataka Maharaj, and we went to an exhibit of amusement park rides. And this is a really big exhibit. We were together. You know, I've been with him to Disney World and all sorts of interesting things. He's a fun friend. So anyway, so we went there and we went to this virtual reality thing. Not only was it 3D virtual reality, but it was actually, the thing moved at the same time. You're in this capsule that, you know, moved in three dimensions. And so we were taking a trip to outer space. And guess what? I got nauseous. I mean, I didn't throw up, but I got so nauseous I had to tear off the glasses, start breathing deeply, because of the illusion that I was actually, you know, journeying at a very light speed or whatever speed through outer space, and the spaceship was going like this and that, I guess, buffeted by the wind, because there's no wind in outer space. But anyway, so, you know, I was an illusion about it. And people now, they have all these video games and, that are really realistic, you know, 3D video games. And I've always been interested in technology. It's one of my Mayas. So there was this one world, virtual world, called Second Life. I don't know if you've heard of it. As soon as I heard about it, I thought, well, I'll just go there and preach. So I got an avatar there, you know, the second body, went into it, and found out there was already a Hare Krishna temple there. I wasn't the first devotee there. And the devotee was selling dhotis and saris for they call this Linden dollars. You know, you heard about this before, yeah. You know, they actually had currency in there and everything like that. But the interesting thing of having a body in that world, you could jump, like, got a lot more superpowers. And then I met even one of my disciples there. But he was many of you have met Gopal. My disciple is very short. He's very, very short. And there he looked like a very tall, handsome. And I said, is that you, Gopal? Yes, Guru Maharaj. So you know, identifying with that body, you know. So and of course,
he was preaching there.
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing, but he was. It's like that. We identify in dreams too. Like Prabhupada said, you know, we have a dream that lasts for 20 minutes or 25 minutes. And then in the dream, we experience so much pain sometimes. I have dreams sometimes that I'm late for an airplane and I'm in anxiety and I wake up in a sweat because I travel a lot. And then I wake up and no airplane, just in bed. So it's like that. I mean, of course, the Buddhists, when you talk about the Buddhists, have understood that point really nicely. They said, you know, the material world is suffering. Suffering is due to attachment. Give up the attachment. Give up the suffering. And then you follow the Eightfold Path, you know, the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism. So we agree with that, too. But if we can identify ourselves as servants of Krishna, Jivasvabhoy, Nitya Krishna Das, like one of the first things that Sanatana Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and this is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, was, K-am-I, you know, who am I? Who am I? You know, so because with the changing the identification, you get rid of the miseries. If you identify yourselves as servants of Krishna, Buddhism doesn't work, or nihilism doesn't work, just by saying, I'm not this, I'm not that. But we identify ourselves in terms of our spiritual relationship, that is, servant of Krishna, then the material miseries are mitigated at that point. And Bhagavatam talks about that, mitigation of the material miseries. So we become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So really, we are not suffering. I mean, don't tell that to someone in the hospital. That's very cruel. You know, you go, someone's suffering from pain. You say, you're not that body, Prabhu. You're not suffering.
No, but the situation is mostly that people maybe think, oh, there's a Hare Krishna, now I can ask something deep.
Yeah.
But they are actually self quite sentimental level.
Yeah.
So
we have to be it.
Then to give some kind of, you know, over the head answer.
No, you don't give that answer to them.
But maybe to somehow stimulate this person's thinking and, you know, like, would you want to step on the philosophical level or would you?
Yeah, you see if they're ready for it. I mean, obviously that's one of the offenses on chanting, to preach the glories of the Lord to those who are not ready to hear it. So in other words, we adjust our presentation according to time, place, and circumstance. You know, I may not tell someone you're not suffering. You know, it's just the body, and you're identifying with the body. That's the cause of the suffering. Of course, that is the truth. But it depends. You know, I'll be compassionate. If someone tells me I'm suffering in this world, and I see they're not ready for higher knowledge, I'll just say that that's very, you know, I'll be more empathic with them. You know, it's difficult when you're suffering. And try to show them some empathy so they're ready to hear from me. So, any other questions? Jayananda, you had a question.
Yes, Gloria. I was wondering about Tadastha Shakti and then internal energy, the relationship, like...
Yeah, Antaranga Shakti.
Yes, so when a living entity finally gets it and gets liberated, and does the Tadastha Shakti for that person become transformed into
No, forever? No. You're always Tadastha.
Yes, okay.
Tadastha, you remain Tadastha. You've just chosen to accept the internal potency of the Lord. And the Antaranga Shakti is actually an expansion of the internal potency of the Lord. Shakti is one, and it expands, just like you have Srimati Radharani, she expands as the Lita Vishaka, the other gopis, and then is the wives of Krishna in Dwarka, and then ultimately, then Lakshmi, the Vishnu Lakshmi, and then the expansions. Yogamaya expansion as the Mahamaya. This is described by the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentaries on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where he's talking about Devaki giving birth to Yogamaya, and then he talks about Mahamaya. It's a very interesting discussion there in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries that, you know, outside of Vrindavan, she may appear as Durga, you know, with the eight arms like that. And then when she goes to Vrindavan, then she becomes Yogamaya. And Yogamaya, I mean, it's really interesting. Yogamaya has 16 different forms. I mean, it gets really complicated, the whole discussion. But the Tathashta, no, we never become anything other than Tathashta. You'll never become like the internal potency. You always be Tathashta, which means potentially you could always choose not to serve Krishna, although you won't do it. Even if you go back, you know, that's the question you're probably hinting at, that when you go back to the spiritual world, there is the potential, but you don't do it. If you decided to do it, you could do it, but you don't do it because you learn your lesson. You know, once burned, twice worry, as the saying goes. So you don't think, you know, I'm going to go back there. You know, maybe I just didn't do it right that time. Maybe I didn't adjust things properly. So I'll be happier. So, okay, any other questions? Yes, Brahma Maharshi Guru.
I think we're living in a very, very good time,
mm-hmm.
because we have this technology, computers, virtual reality, mm-hmm. video games, etc., which makes it so easy to understand the Sankhya
mm-hmm.
philosophy and understand reality. I wonder, how was it for people before computers? Mm-hmm. How did they understand the virtualness? As in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says, Amrisha,
yeah.
Almost factual.
Almost factual.
Means, what does it mean? It's virtual. Almost factual means virtual. So how did they understand it before? What kind of analogy did they use? Like, was it dreams?
Dreams, probably.
Maybe dreams.
Huh? Yeah, dreams.
But it's more difficult, isn't it?
Or mirage.
Mirage.
Yeah, that's another example from the Bhagavatam.
Oh.
Like
but to like Krishna comes into the material world, it's like, as you just said, basically an avatar, as in a video game. He just go, you know, a programmer can go into his own creation.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that works with a mirage. It must have been more difficult. I think for us it's really easy now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really easy. Especially, I think with quantum mechanics it makes it really easy. And video games and everything like that, it's really easy to understand how you're not the body.
It's a fantastic time now to understand.
Yeah, because you can accept different bodies.
Yeah.
I mean, even there's computer program, and you can go on the internet and see how you're going to age later on. Get depressed, you know.
But I think people who are afraid of Krishna consciousness will be inside. They think, I would like to try. And then you say, Shantari Krishna, and it's virtually reality. And be a devotee, and then they can,
And we need to take advantage of the technology, which we haven't done so far, you know. We need to transform our outlook. Even with books, I mean, obviously books are going to be more electronic in the future. And I've experienced that myself. Because I'm really into technology. And so even when I pick up a regular book, I feel, you know, I feel a little difficult.
Really?
Yeah, because I just like...
It's sound.
It's what's this, you know?
It's sound.
It's sound, but really, I mean, I know how to read books, but 99% of my reading is done on electronic media.
It's true.
Sound, yeah.
It's all sound. It's
yeah, I know it's sound.
Encoded. It's different encoded.
But it's just like the physical feel of a book is actually unusual for me at this point.
Really?
Yeah, it becomes.
It's important to understand how technology, because I really keep ahead of technology even more than the young people do. That's just been my mentality. And so right now I have gadgets for reading. I have a full-size gadget. It's like a Kindle, but it's bigger. So I just read on that instead of a book. I'm just used to that.
Yeah, or a computer.
And computer. I don't read on computers usually because of the screen is difficult to read. So I read on electronic paper because that's really much easier on the eyes.
Content.
The content's the same. Oh, yeah, but I'm...
And there's a study that shows that reading off paper has a few percent, I think it was, 11% or something, better comprehension of the content than reading off an electronic device, and not necessarily a screen, even electronic paper, which was invented in Sweden.
Sweden. I'll have to show you my device that I have.
I mean, comprehension is better from a physical book, they said. Tests have been made.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I would say in general, for me, it's better with...
But when you think about it, people are using telephone for everything. They're getting bigger and bigger, so you can read.
Well, I don't read on my mobile phone.
No, it's very small, but I mean, people are getting used to electronic, to read from electronic things.
It's just like, you know, the screen is just too bright. I like paper. You know, this is actually what I have imitates paper. Yeah, I'm used to paper. And then I find my comprehension is best when I take notes on what I read. Mm-hmm. If I don't take notes, whether it's on paper or it's on electronic paper, they may go in one ear out another ear. But I just write down the facts.
How do you write it down?
On paper.
On paper.
I have electronic paper that I can write on too.
But not normally paper.
Normally, I'm still addicted to paper.
Good.
The most percentage.
You know why I like paper so much? One reason is that it's not only the physicality, but I know that once it's fixated on paper, nobody can come in and change it.
Hmm.
Like a few years ago, people woke up in the morning and they noticed that from their Kindle, one book was erased. Remember that case?
Yeah.
And which book was it? 1984.
Oh, 1984, yeah.
Because later, it took weeks for Amazon to admit that they erased overnight. At midnight, they erased the book, that book, from every Kindle in the world. And I don't like this, that Amazon has access to, A, knows what I'm reading, and B, can't even erase it or alter it or change it.
Once
I have it in a physical book, nobody can come here and change it. Mm-hmm. I would see it if somebody takes a word away and puts something else.
That's true.
I like that.
That's true.
I think it's both. The physical book, and for traveling and ease, we can have electronic. But the physical book on paper is still...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, actually, you can't alter it as much. That's a good point.
Yeah, nowadays they're hacking everything. They're hacking you, what you are saying.
Exactly, everything. I don't like to be hacked.
Well, there's people hacking me as I'm talking class.
Yes,
giving
they
class.
Can change your
They're taking things out of context.
That's why we in Europe, we distribute the books, the e-books. You know, we have this e-book combo.
Right, that's good.
So anyone who buys a physical book
gets an e-book.
They get the e-book, the possibility for free to download the e-book. So both is the best.
That's great. No,
the paper book is unbeatable.
That's great. But as a traveling sannyasi, I can't carry anything.
I understand. Yeah. Yes.
That's precisely why.
But there are not so many traveling sannyasis in the world.
No.
Yeah.
They're rare species.
Yeah.
Soon to become extinct.
Most people still have a bookshelf somewhere.
Yeah, I do in my house, but you know, I travel 80% of the time, so.
Yeah.
And I need to research, and I need to look things up, and you know, search for where Prabhupada says this or says that. So it's.
But can't fully trust an electronic.
That's true.
An electronic content. Somebody may have changed it.
That's true.
You're going to the beta phase, and every few months, internet is coming up with a new version, and you don't know, is it the same? Has somebody changed it?
I keep all the old versions.
Me too. I keep them religiously.
Because sometimes people don't want their book published anymore.
Right.
And the new version.
But not only that.
Yeah.
Now there is a real push from South Africa that we remove all content from the beta phase that relates to blacks, what Srila Prabhupada has ever said about blacks.
Political correctness.
Not necessarily, to protect the devotees in South Africa from being
attacked.
Slaughtered.
Yeah, that's probably... yeah, what do you do?
What do you do? But once you have it in a book...
Now you can't do anything about it.
It's yours, you can own it. You can never own digital content, really. You can own the book.
That's true. Of course, with Kindle, or maybe I shouldn't say this online. Whoops. Anyway, I didn't say this.
There's a switch.
Anyway, I'll tell you offline.
Okay.
I'll tell you offline. They can't say it because they'll come and arrest me. Anyway, so.
No, no arrest.
All right, so any other questions?
I was thinking that you said Krishna is punishing you and.
To reform you.
But to reform you, that you have a certain mindset, and this mindset is still there from previous life.
Yeah.
and this you have to correct. And that when you get all punishment from previous life, it's to
reform the mindset. Yeah.
My mindset is wrong.
Yeah, because the activity indicates a mindset. So the Krishna's punishment or reward is to help with the mindset. That's the real point. Good point. Yeah.
Now, maybe not so important, but still interesting, is the question, why or how we in the spiritual world, everything is blissful, everything is fantastic. Why are we interested all of a sudden to go on this roller, on this virtual roller coaster ride in the material world? My impression is that somebody has lured us into this. Some demigods or so who are just starting the roller coaster ride say, hey, come on. Is there somewhere a description? What's happening? What is it that makes us think, say, okay, we're going to take the ride for a short while?
But Prabhupada talks about how, relates this to the hippies in the 1960s, how they were born in rich families. And then all of a sudden they become like street dwellers, you know, like that, because they want to be independent. You know, so in other words, in the spiritual world, there's no envy, per se.
Right.
I mean, you can't have envy.
You can't
have envy. But you can also have a sort of curiosity.
Yeah.
That, you know, hey, Krishna's the center. I wonder what it would be like.
Oh.
So... boom. Then you come down. So, I mean, it's like you're born in a rich family, you have everything. I mean, it's like even myself, I was born in a very rich family. We even had our own airplane. I had my own airplane, you know, real airplane, not just a drone. A sports car. I had an MG sports car. I loved it. And, somehow they decided to join the Hare Krishna movement. I don't know why I did it, but anyway. So, no, but actually before that, I left. You know, I actually ran away from home the first time when I was 12 years old. Police took me back, but anyway. Police said, little boy, what are you doing? I said, I ran away from home. And do you have your parents' permission? Yes. Because I told my mother I was running away from home, and she didn't think I was serious. She said, yeah, you have my permission. So, you know, I had everything. You know, anything I ever wanted. I mean, my parents were really nice to me. It was just like, just ask my father for a sports car. Then, you know, next morning I wake up and there's a sports car outside. But I just left it.
That's a good analogy.
Because I wanted to be independent.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing wrong with my parents. They never hurt me in any way. They were just loving and everything like that. But
curiosity.
Yeah, I just wanted to be independent.
Dissatisfaction to something.
I didn't want to be under control by anybody.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing wrong. And they just, so that's the same thing with Krishna. You just like think, wouldn't it be nice? And then you find yourself here. You become Lord Brahma.
Do we still have a fall, no fall
discussion?
Dichotomy discussion in our movement?
Yeah.
We still have that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But as soon as we apply the virtual reality concept, there is no point to this discussion. Because both
are
correct.
Yeah, you never fell.
You never fell, and you fell.
And you're not here in this world.
You're not here. You're in the spiritual world.
Yeah, we're in the spiritual world. We are not here.
You just don't understand it.
We're not here. That's, tell that to your psychiatrist. He'll give you some nice pills.
There's no reason for this dichotomy, is there?
Yeah, it's not a dichotomy because we never fell.
That's right.
Because we are not here. We're identifying with this body through this mechanism, you know, this virtual reality mechanism.
But we're taking a break from the spirit, from being aware of being in the spiritual world.
And this whole thing is pixelated.
Yes, totally.
So they kind of exist simultaneously.
No, we are in the spiritual world. We're just identifying with something that we're not.
Yeah. We are right now in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
We just don't understand
it. We're just identifying with something. It's not. It's a projection.
Yeah, I mean,
and then
maybe you think that they are kind of two different places, and you are either there or here, you know, and you move from there to this other place.
That's the problem, three-dimensionality. People think two, three-dimensionally.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're projecting their material understanding.
You can't think three-dimensionally when it comes to these matters.
Yeah.
And you start to wake up.
I mean, that's why you go to a holy place, and the holy place, like Vrindavan, is a spiritual world.
Or here.
Yeah. This is a spiritual world. This is a portal.
Yes, it's a portal.
It's a portal. This is the spirit of Vaikuntha. Prabhupada said the temples of Vaikuntha.
Absolutely.
And Prabhupada said there's a veneer of Maya.
Yes.
Veneer means very thin covering, like cheap furniture. Yes. Is it? There's a veneer of Maya, but it's really, like in Vrindavan, you see the pigs and the monkeys. Well, there are monkeys in the spiritual world too, and pigs too. And so you have to look beyond it.
So there are still devotees who think that you can only be either here
or there. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
They should look into quantum mechanics.
Yeah. I have a whole presentation I'm putting together on it, on quantum mechanics, or the history of quantum mechanics and how it connects with Krishna consciousness, and how consciousness really transforms matter, like the slit. Twin slit example. That somehow or other matter knows when you're going to measure it.
Yes. How is that possible, right?
Oh my God. It knows your intention.
Yes.
Oh my God. Isn't it? I mean, a photon knows your intention even before you measure it, where it is. And it gets so upset with you, it won't let you measure both its velocity and position. That's Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. That actually many of these people were Germans, actually.
And Austrians.
Germans and Austrians, isn't it? Interesting.
Yeah, I think so.
It's really interesting that, practically many of the original scientists.
And there's this genius in Vienna, Zeilinger.
Yeah.
He's experimenting, he's showing with experiments the double slit, for example.
Yeah, he came up with this really complicated double slit type of thing where he entwines two photons. You heard about this one before. And, they're connected with each other. And the one that's connected knows what state the other one is going to be in. It's just like unbelievable. Oh my God. I mean, so it's not just matter happening here. It's not mechanistic, physics used to be very mechanistic.
Yes.
If you know the laws of physics, law of gravity, and thermodynamics, then you can predict anything, but it's not. Instead, you have this thing called chaos theory. Anyway, I guess we're getting a little too far out here for everybody. It's consciousness. Consciousness changes matter.
Yeah.
Well, matter is conscious. Krishna's in every atom.
Well, Krishna's in every atom, and spirit soul's there too. But our consciousness, as human beings, can change the direction of matter, especially on the subatomic level. Yeah.
Related to predetermination versus free will.
Yeah.
So been explaining today and yesterday that there's like free will is not only an illusion, consciousness can in fact affect matter. So it seems, however, that some points in time, even in future time, are fixed, isn't it? You have, for instance, in Bhagavatam, there are predictions about
Kali Yuga.
Not only the change of ages, but the particular person will take up this post. So how do you know if the person has a free will? So it seems that
Krishna knowing the future and free will are not mutually exclusive concepts. Krishna knows how you're going to use your free will. That doesn't negate your free will. It doesn't say that you don't have free will. So I don't see how they contradict each other. You know, Krishna's saying, and, you know, as far as the avatars, that's Krishna, you know, Kalki. So that's Krishna saying that, you know, in the future, I'm going to do this. That's his free will. But Krishna doesn't say, in the future, you're going to do this.
What's more meaning, like, a particular personality will take the post of Indra, so that's not Krishna, that's Jiva.
Yeah, he knows, Krishna knows the personality is going to choose to do that. Hmm. You know, he knows the personality is going to choose. It doesn't mean that the person is forced to do it, it just means he's going to choose to do it. Krishna says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything past, present, and future. That means what Krishna's going to do. And actually, if you get really more complex in the material, I don't think we should start talking about time in the material world and quantum mechanics conception of time.
Yes.
And that's even more complex.
Yes.
That things are always connected. You know, it gets really complex. The material time is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual realm. That's what Bhagavatam says. So material time is, anyway, whatever.
There is spiritual time. Also.
Spiritual time.
But we cannot really comprehend it.
Yeah, it's not connected. And the movement in the spiritual world is consistent. It's not quantitized like it is in the material world. Like everything in the material world is quantitized. You know, you seem to have smooth movement, but it's actually a series of different movements on the subatomic level and also the macro level too. Okay, don't want to put everyone to sleep with it. Yes.
Spiritual world, we have independence. If we want to come to this material world,
yes.
How this happen?
How this happens?
By consciousness. Or?
By consciousness. That we want to imitate. Like Prabhupada makes it very clear that we want to imitate. And it's not, like I said, it's not envy.
So
let me finish. Continuing with the example, the little girl wanting to cook, seeing her mother, is not necessarily envious of her mother. She just wants to imitate her mother. It's an innocent thing. Yeah, so.
But then how living being traveling? So, how traveling?
Well, it doesn't really travel. Then that's the Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord, puts one into the, creates this video game that we're all.
He says, time of death, subtle body carry the soul to next body.
Yes, that's the conception. The conception of life takes the body from one avatar to another. Just like my desire, when I go on my computer, again using the computer, I will pick a particular avatar for myself because of my subtle body's desire. Like if I will obviously not pick an avatar of an old man. I could, but usually I'll pick someone who's strong, intelligent, you know, like a superhero.
Yeah.
You know, if I had to pick an avatar, I'd pick someone who could, a superhero. And someone who was handsome and young and Krishna conscious. Able to lead nice kirtans, you know. So, yes, a subtle body, even now within this body, our mind gets us, when we're using computers, gets us to pick a particular avatar. I know it sounds weird. I mean, it's interesting, the technology. You know, Google just came up with something that if you pick a particular animal, you can place that animal in your house, like a tiger or something like that. So I did a tiger and I put it right in my house, right with me, and I said, I got a problem here. I took a picture of it. I sent it out to some friends, I have a problem with my house, a tiger got in the house. And it looks like real. It had a shadow and everything like that. So people thought, you know, not the tiger, I put a deer in my house and people actually thought that was real. And I told him, I said, the real problem is the deer is passing stall all over the place and I'm having trouble getting rid of it. But it wasn't a real deer, and people actually thought it was a deer in my house.
Do you have a house?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
And the virtual thing resembles your house?
No, you put it in my house. I'll show you later what I mean.
You mean a hologram?
No, it's actually a real thing, and you can move around it and everything.
Yeah, so a hologram.
Yeah, it's like a hologram.
But what projects it?
I'll show you. I'll show you. Yeah. I'll see you later. No sense in getting too much money in front of the team.
No, but this is all interconnected.
Yeah, it's interconnected, but it's, you know, it looks real.
Everything looks real, but it isn't.
It's real. You know, it's a reality. It's like an illusion, a mirage, illusion. And so this world appears to be real, like in a dream. Actually, the Bhagavatam talks about that. It's really interesting. The more you get into this understanding of modern science, the more you can actually see the Bhagavatam's, you know, statements, you know, you can relate to them.
Totally. The weird thing is that we all see this tree out there.
Yeah.
Right? We all have the same
perception.
That's really interesting that this... Although it's virtual,
yeah,
and our bodies are virtual, and our senses are virtual, but we perceive the same thing. Maybe that's slightly different, but...
That's no problem. There's this MPOGs, multiplayer games.
That's what it is. Again, that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's happening in virtual reality. You've got people from all over the world playing the same game from different perspectives.
Yeah.
And they're all seeing the same tree, the same persons, and everything.
And my body source says this. Not
well, the world is real, just like what you see on the computer is real because there's electrons and digital things going on. They're real, but the reality, the unreality, is you're seen as something which it's not. Just like a rope and a snake example. The rope is real, it's not a snake. The illusion is to think it's a snake. So the computer world is real, temporary, but it's real, it exists, as electrons. In the same way, we see this world as solid. You know, like this piece of metal right here. It's solid. It's not solid.
It's not solid. Absolutely not. It just repels.
Yeah. It's not solid at all. It's like... Practically, no, it's practically 99.999% empty space.
Absolutely. All of the bodies of the people on the planet, 7 billion,
yeah.
If you would take the matter, not the space, the matter,
yeah.
It would fit into a grapefruit.
Yeah.
It was calculated.
And, you know, all this stuff in the universe would fit into a very singularity. That's another type of singularity.
Yeah. Yeah.
That...
But still, it repels. I cannot put my fingers through the floor.
Yeah. Well, the video game designer wrote that rule.
Exactly.
Sorry about that analogy. Yeah.
And Einstein tried to find the rules in one formula.
Yeah.
The unified
field equation.
Theory.
Yeah, but there's
it
no.
It doesn't exist,
doesn't,
does it?
Doesn't exist. No, there's no unified field equation.
Because Krishna can change it anyway.
Yeah, when I was going to the university, the scientists were still trying to find out the unified field.
Everyone wants to find it. It's the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
They will not find it.
And so, yeah, I mean, so there's rules, like you have the designer of the game, which is Krishna, of course, Lord Brahma working for him, has designed the game so we have these rules of the game. You can't go through the walls.
Exactly.
Unless you're a yogi. If you're a yogi and you have all these yogic cities, then you can break the rules somehow or other because you see through the game.
Yeah.
You can actually, I mean, it's like, all right, so using that example, is like the Matrix again.
Yeah.
Like Neo, he saw that it was a game and he could break the rules of the game, the rules of the virtual reality. So yogis are able to do that with it. They can make themselves smaller than the smallest, bigger than the bigger, and lighter than the lightest, right?
Yeah.
But we can't do that because we haven't realized it's a game yet.
Yeah.
It's not
still in the material world, even the yogi.
Oh,
Yeah, but he really can, he can jump from one planet to another,
yeah,
or take bath in one river and come up in another river. He's breaking the rules that we are subjected to. You know, Prabhupada said that. He can take bath in one sacred river and come up in another river.
But he is still in the material world.
Yeah.
I mean, he can fly, he can become...
Well, he's not actually, he's realized he's not in the material world.
But he chooses to be here.
No, he's realized that he's not, but he realizes it's a virtual reality. Although he doesn't use that word.
But it's still material.
It's still material.
Yeah.
But it's, he understands the virtual.
He understands he's in it. Like, I realized when I went to Second Life, this virtual world, I was in a virtual world. I wasn't completely immersed. But
this could happen.
That could happen.
Full immersion could happen.
Yeah, well, that will happen in the future. Maybe not with me, but it will happen. I mean, you see people playing video games and they die.
And they cry, whatever.
They,
some,
well,
of them die, yeah.
Some of them die because they forget to eat or sleep or do anything, and they have a heart attack and they just die because they're absorbed in the video game.
They're a double illusion.
Yeah, that's an illusion within an illusion.
That's right.
Yeah. The Prabhupada also talked about drugs being an illusion within an illusion.
Yeah.
I'd say, anyway, it's an interesting discussion. It's time for... from video game prasadam. Because I'm in the video game and I think I'm hungry. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada.